Very pleased now to introduce Eckhard Schmidt from Germany, who will talk about a very interesting set of historical things. Nuremberg has been a center of astronomical work. I worked on it mainly from comets, but we're going to talk about eclipses. And for hundreds of years now, important scientific observations have been coming out of Nuremberg in Germany. I'm looking forward to hearing about these observations of eclipses.
Nuremberg was not in the total So we moved to other places southwards, and this was the question where took place other eclipses at Nuremberg. So I have written a few solar eclipses from former times. The first is 1241, or the next 1433, and so on. And the first eclipses are not written or mentioned, but the later one are observed by Eimert, Wurzelbaum, Doppelmayr, and Mayr itself. So let's start with 1433. This is a total eclipse in Nuremberg, but I didn't find any map. So I used the picture from the PC program guide to simulate the eclipse from 1433. In that time, you find only the description of the eclipses as a punishment of God and so on. So it is more a religion interpretation of the eclipse. But the times changes, and so the astronomer became more and more a man to interpret the signs in the eclipses. So the first astronomer in Nuremberg was Victor Montanus. He lived from 1433 to 1476, and he computed a lot of eclipses, moon eclipses, sun eclipses, because he used this for his calendar and his ephemerides. So he came to Nuremberg and he promised to publish 45 books. But he completed only 9 books, but the ephemerides are the very prominent, because it is said that Columbus used this ephemerides on his journey to America. It consists of 448 pages with more than 300,000 data. So you, on the right side you see the phantom eclipse of the sun, eclipse of the moon, eclipse of the moon also, the sun, and so on. And then he computed if it is a partial eclipse and so on, page by page. Here you see the year 1491, and so on. In the whole, we have 8 prominent astronomers at Nuremberg. I explained you Regio Montanus, and we have the next one is Walter. He was a pupil from Regio Montanus. He used, after the death of Regio Montanus, he used the instruments and he bought the books from Regio Montanus, and he observed and computed eclipses also. The next one is Werner, also an astronomer, and Ross. But Ross lived 200 years later. He published the first astronomical handbook of astronomy in the German language. Now, we have an observatory erected by Eimert. It started 1678 and ended 1751. This is Nuremberg Castle in the background, and this is the north direction, and you see the main instrument here It's in the north-south direction, so it is used for measuring the height of the sun. The astronomer Heimat was more an artist, but he was very interested in astronomy and studied astronomy also. And the meaning of Heimat is that he collected a lot of people around him in making astronomy research. And the next picture shows you Heimat and his pupil Wurzelbaum. And this was the partial eclipse in Nuremberg from 1684. Here the dotted line means E, and this is from Heimat, and the other line is from Wurzelbaum. So they worked together at this eclipse. And the accuracy of their observation drew attention to Hevelius at Danzig, and Hevelius spoke highly of Heimat and especially Wurzelbaum. This eclipse results were presented to the Royal Society of London in 1684 by Theodore Haag in next year, 1685. Edmund Halley computed the longitude difference between London and Nuremberg of 44.5 minutes. Wurzelbaum got an invitation from Halley and asked for correspondence. On November 1687, Edmund Halley read a letter from Wurzelbaum about the eclipse from 1687. So we can imagine that eclipse observation is continuing in the field of Wurzelbaum, not so more from Heimat. Wurzelbaum, the name is on the moon crater here, and this is Wurzelbaum. During the 7th to the 18th century, Wurzelbaum was the best known astronomer in Nuremberg. He was a trained merchant who busied himself in his 3 hours with astronomy. In the 1680s, he became known for his accurate observations of lunar and solar eclipses. At the end of the 1680s, he left his trade, and from 1691, he was completely occupied with astronomy. To that end, he constructed a small octagonal observing tower on the roof of his house, this octagonal tower. And this is his house, and it was here on the top of the roof. He took the measurement of the solar paths and determined the geographical coordinates of Nuremberg. And the calendar reform also played a major role in his life. So this gives you an introduction how he observed and measured the eclipses. You see the window and the projection here. So you have the image of the sun here. So, or in this way, you find the room of the astronomers in other books also, like by Hevelius or other astronomers. It was a typical working room for the astronomers observing the sun. So the eclipse from 1706 was observed by Wurzelbaum. And other observations made by him are the comet from 1680, and he observed the Mercury transit also. So these pictures are animation from the guide program also. But this is difficult to compare with it, because it's differences in the data. So also the eclipse 17.6 were also observed by Doppelmayr, and maybe his mapping is more known. You see in Europe. This map was sold in later years also, but without the eclipse zone. This is total eclipse zone, and when we compute it with the guide program, but maybe here this came to the conversion between the historic sign and the guide program, but here on the other side there is differences, many differences. So maybe the data from former times are not so exactly. So the next astronomer is Tobias Mayr, and he was born in 1723. But in his work, in his mathematical atlas, he computed the eclipse from 1722, because he tried to improve the computation of eclipses. And here's a total zone, and this is in his book, the Mathematical Atlas, he computed it for the meridian from Versailles here. So it was only a partial eclipse. He used eclipse to improve the computation, and in the museum, Tobias Mayr Museum at Marbach, they proved his computation and found out that his data were correct. So this was a partial eclipse about Versailles. So next is Couch, 1793, but he is from Austria and lived in Vienna, but he computed this for Nuremberg. So the city council has a main interest to compute eclipses because it was a part of their economy. In Nuremberg we had sundae shops. In the 16th, 17th century, they sold many, many sundials, they printed calendars, and so on. And for all these things, they need the eclipse data for their calendars. And after the decline of the Nuremberg astronomy, the city council gave money to other astronomers in other cities to compute the calendar for the geographic position for Nuremberg. So you find in the German National Museum a lot of maps and books where you can see all the eclipses, and now I start only like a slideshow, other records. Here another example from 1748 or from 1807. Yes, now I come to the end of my speech. As I pointed out, this is a disk of Nebra. It exists only one time. You see on the left side the sun and on the right side the moon. And if you go further to the present, like a time scale here from left to right, you find what the Nuremberg astronomy telescope. This is a drawing by Christoph Sturm, and he wanted to hold the moon shadow. It is a symbol for knowledge. Yeah, and you see the ropes there. They like to pull the shadow away. So he has a thinking of education. He liked to educate the people and to explain how science is. And his book maybe is published 1,000 times. He worked as a professor at the Nuremberg University. And today we have the Cosmos Himmelsjahr, which is published maybe 100,000, but not in Nuremberg. It's published and printed in Stuttgart. And more modern, you have so if you see the time scale from former times to present, we have 3,000 years of astronomical education. And so Nuremberg plays a small time, one of the leading role in Europe. And so many materials. If one is interested in historical eclipse, you are invited to visit Nuremberg. Thank you very much.
Paper. Is there a question, Serge?
Yes. Did you find among those chronicles, Nuremberg chronicles, did you find something about some report about an aureola, something that people would have seen around the moon, around so viewing the totality? Did you find something like this?
The question is from Serge Kuchmi from the Institut d'Astrophysique in Paris, is whether anybody saw the corona or any comments around this these images.
Maybe since 18th century, they pointed out and made a dotted line around the disk, but not in the early times. Yeah. It is not precise. In 1793, I showed you the eclipse computed by Gauss. He wrote a small line how to observe the eclipse, like a spectacular line. Yeah, this one, for this one. Maybe this is the first one for the public to use another method to observe.
What is the first corona mention that you know of, sir?
Oh, Egyptian.
Well, we'd like to hear more about that. And we'll hear from Dr. Stevenson tomorrow about his
dark drawings. There are drawings.
Drawings showing the corona. Well, Barry Jones.
Yeah, I think agree with the name Redford. The discrepancy that you mentioned between your computer program showing where it gets hard and what you infer from historical data, I mean, Mr. Stevenson has used this, of course, to infer things about variations in the Earth's rotation, whereas you put it down to errors of observation in the past. So I just wondered what your comment was about that.
But Barry is asking whether the differences between the predicted and the observed can be rotational differences that Dr. Stevenson will talk about tomorrow, whereas you said there were errors of observation.
One is the prediction to predict an eclipse, and so it is there are many differences. For example, the coastal line, if you check the coastal lines, they differ from today. So if I use the guide program, I see all the data are different.
He also commented it was similar in the middle and different at the edge.
I have to fix one location.
I saw Daniel Fisher.
Yes. I was quite struck by the fact that you did not find anything detailed about the 1433 eclipse. I had looked into this one a few years ago because it was the last one, last total one in my hometown, and couldn't find anything either in old Bonn Chronicles. Is there any specific reason you can point out why this apparently pretty big and impressive eclipse has left any traces in the Chronicles?
The mapping started in that time, 1430 and 50. So we must say that the Schedel's Chronik from 1492 was the first to, as a compendium, but there is no one before.
There is no chronicle of that particular eclipse, 1433, in Celle, which is at the border of Germany and the Netherlands. I can forward you that if you
want.
And the last question.
Well, just to mark,
did you say your name to
Robert Francesco, these small differences is of course also partially due to the errors of 18th century mapping. I mean, the whole problem of longitude was still a big problem.
Yeah.
So in general you find that the latitudes are more or less okay, but the longitude, the way you get from Europe.
The so there's big problems in the map itself.
Exactly. I will show that later.
Robert Francesco is going to speak this afternoon.
Well, for the lunch hour.
Well, just last talk this morning. Going into afternoon. By a bit. Well, thank you very much. I thank all the speakers so far. Patrick, do you have any announcements?
Just to tell you that we start back again at 11 o'clock, so if you can start moving just up front. There are books for sales as well. Jay has some books, and Sharon has some books. It's often a £5 for your book, where half of it goes to charity. So there are also pictures available from Boito and Marcella, Jan and Viva. So there's quite a bit available there for people who want to purchase something.
Thank you very much. So 35 minutes back here, please. And we'll continue.